Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on another gorgeous, but it is hot, a 90-degree-plus day here in the Auburn-Opelika area. Hope everybody doing well as we welcome you in to the Thursday Drive. We have, let's see, it's Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer also with us here in the studio as we get things underway here in hour number one. We will give you the phone number. Yeah, we can do that now with the situation that we have with the phones. After the electrical storm that we had, we have multiple lines, but they don't roll over. So generally, if we have a guest on our hotline and we took calls, the call would ring. We'd have to try to screen it and put you on hold. The way things are right now, when we have a call that is into the board, it'll just ring. So we'll give you the phone number, and you're welcome to call us in the show after we have a very special guest join us here at the top of the show. The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, that number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
As I mentioned, very special guest joining us here right at the top of the show as we welcome in Auburn Athletics Director John Cohen. John, thanks for joining us here on The Drive.
Yeah, guys, thrilled to be on the show today. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. We were just, we've obviously been discussing things as everything winds down. You're coming to the end of another athletic season and a little over a year and a half since you've taken over as AD. Just would love to get your thought as to the sort of the state of the program, if you will, for the athletics department as we head into the summer of 24 and getting ready for the 24-25 academic year.
Well, sure, guys. We're just, so many exciting things happening. You know, what a great run by Leroy Burrell and his track team, finishing second in the country. We're really probably a false start away from being national champions potentially in men's track and field. And, of course, our golf team just captured a national championship out in Carlsbad, California. And, just a lot of really positive things happening. Our women's golf team finished the national championships, finished eighth in the country. Mm-hmm. So just really proud of all those guys and what we've been able to accomplish. Really just got a brand new women's tennis coach we're so excited about, Jordan Szabo. And, of course, Chris and Kate Malbeau, who are joining us from a softball perspective. So a lot going on, but very exciting stuff in the department.
Oh, no question about it. Wanted to get your take on the co-head coaches, something that is not common, although it's obviously been done and very successful at Tennessee, where Team Malvo is just matriculating from.
Yeah, there's been some pretty successful programs that have done it. Washington has done a husband and wife team, and Tennessee has done a husband and wife team. It's more common in softball than in some other sports, but these two together, if you believe in synergy, you're going to believe in this couple, because they are a dynamic group, and I think they're going to do great things here at Auburn.
John, first of all, thanks for making some time for us. Really appreciate it. This is Dan. And as we approach the upcoming football season, a lot of big changes. The playoff has expanded. Texas and Oklahoma are in the SEC. Hugh Freeze going into year two. Just your thoughts on the job he's done so far. What were you expecting, and what have you observed? What have you seen working with Coach Freeze?
Well, first of all, I think he's one of the most dynamic offensive minds, great recruiter. I think you've already seen that out of his first full year here and seen the class that he brought in. Just so many exciting things. This man really knows how to evaluate and recruit and love the staff that he has put together. And I'm very, very excited. I think, you know, if you look at our football team, when Hugh got here, we needed to improve some things. We needed to improve physicality at the line of scrimmage. We needed to improve the wide receiver position. We needed to distribute the ball in a much better fashion. And I think all of those goals are getting better under Hugh Freeze. And I think we're going to see that progression this fall.
Talking with John Cohen, Auburn Athletics Director, here in the opening segment of The Drive on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer also here in the studio. John, I mean, yesterday, quite a tribute, I think, to where Bruce Pearl has Auburn basketball when the ACC-SEC Challenge announced, and Auburn will be taking on Duke. That is that is quite the compliment for Auburn basketball.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm going to say this about Bruce. I can tell you for a fact, there are a lot of coaches who don't want to play against the big best in the non-conference. Bruce Pearl does. I mean, just really simply put, he wants to play the best schedule he possibly can, and that's a real credit to him. He's not playing a soft schedule in the non-conference. He's excited about this opportunity at Cameron Indoor. And I think we're going to have an exciting basketball team. As you know, the complement of the folks we have coming back, plus some of the transfers and the high school kids we have in the program coming forth. I just saw them working out this morning at 6:30, and it's an exciting group.
Yeah, and I think we're expecting some news here shortly about another premium non-conference matchup that'll be played a little north of us. That we'll wait a little bit. I think that one's expected out at any time. Love to get some thoughts. There are a couple of things I wanted to get your thoughts on baseball wise. First of all, let's turn away from Auburn just a second, and the school where you started your career, Birmingham Southern. With such an outstanding baseball tradition, you know, have closing its doors and watching its team make a bit of a run there in the postseason, that had to really touch you watching that and seeing the school close down.
Yeah, you know, Jan Weisberg is a former assistant of mine at the University of Kentucky, so really cheering hard for him. You know, it's a really a tough situation. I spent a year of my life at Birmingham Southern. It's a great liberal arts school, really good people there. But at the same time, you know, these things can happen, unfortunately. And I hope all those kids have an opportunity to continue their baseball career. But, yeah, what a magical run they had. That was exciting to see, and have nothing but fond memories of Birmingham Southern.
Oh, absolutely, and an outstanding baseball tradition. Sad to see that gone. Wanted to get your thoughts. A tough year for Butch and company this past year. Really, just couldn't ever get things put together. But this is you know what I believe, and most people do. But I'd love to get your thoughts on this. A blip on the radar, because this is not what anyone expected or expects down the road from Auburn baseball.
Well, you know, Butch is not only is a great coach, he's a great person. And I think looking back, I think he had a great year last year. He finishes in fifth place out of 14 in the best baseball league in America. He hosted regional. Didn't do what he wanted to do in postseason. But, you know, he rewarded some kids. He rewarded kids on that team instead of going out and getting, you know, a ton of transfers like everybody else did. And I just, I think if you would replay it in his mind, you know, he might have done some personnel things differently. You know, all of us who have been in the coaching profession, you know, are constantly evaluating where we are and what we could have or should have done. That's who Butch is. That's why he is a great coach. And I think he's making those adjustments right now.
Well, I mean, things have changed so drastically since you have moved into administration, with NIL, the transfer portal, and the ability for players to move freely. I wonder, we talked to a lot of former coaches and get some interesting answers when, you know, how much do you miss it now? A lot of them go, I miss working with the kids, but roster management is nothing like anyone had expected just less than a decade ago.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, we're in a new age of college athletics, and of course, you know, the financial end of things is always at the forefront, and we're just going to have to adapt to some change. There's some really good parts of this. There's some kids who are going to have some financial opportunities that they didn't have in the past, and there's some kids who really need that, and I'm glad to see that. More than anything, we don't want to be wasteful. We want to make sure we do what's right for the kids. We want them to have a great experience. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, guys, and I can say this from personal experience as a coach and a player, an 18- to 23-year-old really doesn't know what experience they're having at an institution. And the reason they don't is because they have nothing to compare it to.
Right.
You have no idea what it's like somewhere else because you've only been at the one place. And to always assume that it's always better somewhere else, as we all know as adults, that's not the assumption you want to make. So there is really good and some negative things about having the ability to go wherever you want, whenever you want, because it doesn't matter what profession you're in, mine, yours, or anybody's. All of us at some point in time had to pay our dues to get there. And if there's always an escape hatch to get out and say, you know, I'm not getting what I want here, I'm going to go do something else, that's not always what's in the best interest of young people. But if they're not going to get a chance to play and the coach is honest with them and they want to get out in the world and have a new opportunity, I understand that part too. So again, it's a new world, and we just have to adapt to it.
John, I wanted to ask you about the Nike deal, and obviously you guys announced that a little while back. Since it has been announced, just what have you kind of heard and seen the reaction from, you know, all the factors involved in this? I know you had said during the process that you wanted to get input from everybody involved. Well, now that it's out and it's been announced, what's the reaction been from you know, those same folks you talked to in the process?
Yeah, I think it's been mostly positive. There's been, you know, there's some loyalty toward Under Armour, and there should be. We've had a relationship with those guys for 18 years. Kevin Plank runs a wonderful company. It's a great American success story, and we're proud of being part of that success story. But the most important thing is taking care of the needs of our student athletes, of our fan base. And, you know, we spoke to a lot of our student athletes, got a lot of input from kids who were never going to get to wear Nike at Auburn, because they're graduating and moving on. And again, this won't go into place until a year from now, essentially, but we felt like it was what's best for Auburn University in the long run. And, you know, there's a lot of components to that as well. You know, there's a functionality of the shoe. There's a functionality of the equipment involved. There's a financial piece. There's a lot that goes into it. But we're very, very pleased with where we are with Nike.
John, wanted to ask you about facilities. The baseball upgrades are underway. Some folks, you know, I'll just tell you flat out, my parents face the scoreboard at the football stadium that is being replaced after this season, and there are you know, actually that's my question, is what are the other priorities, you know, as far as upgrades you would like to see in the athletic department and on campus?
Well, certainly the north end zone is something that we feel like is a little bit untapped. We feel like, you know, there's some things that can be done in terms of premium opportunities in the north end zone. We don't know when. We don't know how. Obviously, we have, you know, a system in place here at Auburn that involves our board of trustees, our president. We're all in alignment of doing what's in the best interest of Auburn. But I would say the north end zone is something that we are really looking into and trying to make plans for at some point. We want to make improvements to the arena. Neville Arena, as great as it is, we feel like there's some more premium opportunities there. You know, the baseball project is there. We really, really need to do some improvements to softball. With the Malvo's coming in, we feel like it's a perfect time to make a couple of additions here, especially for fan engagement and premium areas and gathering spots. You know, the modern-day fan wants to be mobile. They want to enjoy the game, but they also want to visit with friends, and they want to be mobile, and we need to have those opportunities at all of our venues. So there's a lot of plans. We're going to do some things for our national championship golf team and our final eight women's team. We're going to do some things for that facility as well. So there's a lot out there that we want to do.
No question about that. As we wind things down, a couple of more minutes with Auburn AD John Cohen here on the Thursday Drive. John, the landscape of college athletics has changed. Mentioned NIL in the transfer portal, but the impending settlement, apparent settlement that looks like is on the horizon there for the NCAA, the House versus NCAA, and the revenue sharing. There is so many things that are coming down the road. I was just talking with Wimp and Barry Sanderson yesterday. They for some reason have me on once a week, but they said they'd ask Greg Byrne and ask me, well, what's John Cohen saying about this? They hadn't talked to you lately, they said. Just your thoughts on the changes and how long until you guys, and then we might know some definite plans for how, you know, money, revenue sharing, things are going to be dispersed with the players, employees. I mean, you've got employee, employer, so many different things that are still questions right now.
Yeah, you know, I think there's an exciting element to this. I think I think we are in a new era, and I think we need to adapt to that. I think that, again, there are kids who are very deserving of these opportunities. There are kids who need these opportunities, and we don't want to walk away from that. We don't. But at the same time, you know, we have to make sure that we don't have the free agency that has existed in some professional sports going back 60, 70 years. We have to make sure that it's competitive, it's equitable. We have to make sure that the kids are taken care of, that they're educated in so many different ways. So it's extremely complicated. And what we're looking for is just a set of standards that everybody mm-hmm. can go by. That's all we're asking for. You know, we can't play on a 100-yard field and go on the road and play on one that's 102 yards. We can't go on the road and play a basketball game where the rim is, you know, 10 foot 2 inches. We have got to have a set of standards, and that's all we're asking for. And I think there's going to be some autonomy involved in us creating those standards for the future, which is really exciting.
John, something I wanted to ask you about, because it's come up on our show quite a bit, is the future of Beard Eves Coliseum. It still stands, I believe, 12 years now after, maybe longer after the after Neville Arena opened up. Auburn still hosts adapted athletics, wheelchair basketball inside Beard Eves. I know a lot of athletic department offices. I think Andy Burcham still has an office inside Beard Eves, but I do wonder if it's still in the long term plans of the university, or if that's something the athletic department is also looking at as far as facilities and upgrades.
Yeah, the university is constantly looking at that facility, and you know, obviously there's some really fond memories of that facility. I know Dr. Roberts has mentioned, you know, several different ways in which either the space for it that it sits on right now, or mm-hmm. the facility itself can be used in the future. You know, my boss is a chemical engineer. He has an engineering mind and an engineering heart. So he always is looking for the functionality of a facility or of a system. So this has been a topic of discussion. You know, Dr. Roberts is coming up on his second year as the president of Auburn. I think he's one of the very best in the country, if not the best. I think, honestly, I think that is something, whatever we do with it, I think there's you know, a level of excitement with that space that, that everybody's looking forward to.
Yeah, I agree with you completely on Dr. Roberts. He was my ultimate boss in years that I was in the College of Engineering, as well as doing the radio. And it's a good thing. Doesn't hurt the fact that that he's also very knowledgeable and very much a sports fan.
He's probably listening.
Yeah. He may well be.
He is very knowledgeable about sports. He's very knowledgeable about Auburn. I mean, he's such a talented man, and it's just it's an honor to work with him every day.
John, before we let you go, I've got a question I've got to ask you, since we've been talking with just about everybody this week. I went saw the Stones in Atlanta this past Friday, and it sort of turned into all week. People have been wanting to call in and talk about some of the favorite shows they'd ever seen. Is there one that comes to mind for you, a favorite musical act that you've seen at some time?
Oh, my God. You know, I grew up on, like, Carole King and Jim Croce and Elton John, so I'm kind of a 70s guy. I've seen Elton John in concert, which was excellent.
Absolutely.
Nell and I love blues. I tell you, I think Chris Stapleton's one of the most talented musicians who's come along in a long time. A guy really combines blues and country and rock and roll. He's phenomenal. So, yeah, a lot of my taste comes from Nell. She always has something playing in the background, but that's kind of what we listen to.
Well, John, if you want to hear some 70s stuff, some good stuff, Wings 94.3, which happens to be the home of Auburn University Athletics here in town, the flagship radio station carrying football and men's basketball and baseball as well. They're on Wings 94.3, but when they're not playing Auburn University Athletics, some pretty good 70s hits you can hear, including Sir Elton among others.
Absolutely. John, we really appreciate you spending a little time with us. What's the, you know, we talk a lot about the summer for football or basketball and plans like that. What is the what are the summer plans for the Coens?
Well, we're going to take the kids to the beach at some point in July. You know, I've kind of been reacquainted with some high school buddies. There's a group of about 10 of us who've gone on a golf trip, which I've never done before in my entire life. Yeah, there's a couple of things, but, you know, we're not finished as ADs, you know, running college athletics just yet. You know, we still have some work to do with that, with court settlements and things like that.
Yeah, I had a feeling that there'd be a little bit of work to be done, but enjoy enjoy as much as you can here during the summer. And thanks again for joining us, and you're welcome. You're welcome to be with us anytime.
Thank you so much, guys. Enjoyed it. War Eagle.
John Coen, Auburn Athletics Director, joining us right here at the outset of the Thursday Drive. Yeah, I like his musical taste too.
That was sensational. We'll probably run that again either later today if there's time. Although we have Justin Ferguson in the house, so then, you know, we might just
maybe
tomorrow if folks missed any of that. You know, and of course the podcast will have that in its entirety if you missed any of our talk with Auburn.
I mean,
AD.
People would rather hear John than me. So
John Coen,
I get that.
Yeah, well, he's like I said, he's welcome anytime.
Mm-hmm. All right.
We will get to our first break of the afternoon. I'd love for you to join in again. The line should be open, 334-321-1390. Come on in here on the Thursday Drive.
At Reynolds Afterwards and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Again, our thanks to Auburn Athletics Director John Coen joining us for almost half the first hour. So we really appreciate him spending a little time with us. It's Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. All right, I see
that was really, really cool of John Coen,
he's a pretty cool guy.
And candid stuff about
it wasn't dry and you know very statesmanlike as you would
like,
get.
All right, let me look at my notes.
Shooting from the hip.
He wasn't treating it like it was a minefield or something where he was afraid to say this or that. He was just giving us straightforward answers on a lot of
very
stuff.
Good.
And I thought
you can always tell he's got he was a coach. He's got that. Yep. You know, especially when you talk to him in an interview setting or just in a casual setting, you know, off the record.
And if he were still a coach, I'd say he sounds like a coach who feels pretty good about his team coming up this season. because he talks way he talked about Hugh Freeze, the way he talked about, I mean, the marquee sports.
Sure.
Granted, he would love to see an improved baseball season, or else they might have to make a tough decision if results don't improve there. But with basketball, both men's and women's basketball, coming off the seasons they just had, and with the men, you know, adding that exciting Duke matchup, and of course with the football team, you know, there's a feeling with the football team that things have improved from this point last year, or from the team that Auburn took into the end of the regular season or the bowl game. And so that's another reason why John Cohen could feel good about the football coach that he hired. We talked about that on the podcast, right? That ultimately the Hugh Freeze sinking or swimming is going to have a lot to do with how people view the John Cohen era at Auburn. Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you could look at the overall success of the athletic program this past year. And this is something I wrote at the Observer on Monday. A couple years ago, I dug up, like, Auburn had a really, really good year, right? You know, went to the College World Series, had the big run in basketball. And I was looking and I was thinking, okay, how successful is that top to bottom if you stack it up to pretty much every other year of Auburn athletics? And I found that you could have made an argument that 21-22 was the best. And then with the track team doing what they just did, and with the golf team winning a national title, I went back and ran the numbers again. This past year exceeded the rest. Huh. And I kind of ranked like, you know, all the teams together, and just kind of said, okay, this is, you know, in order from men's golf really to baseball in terms of their overall success this year. And there's 17 varsity sports at Auburn. 12 of them either won a title of some kind or had a really good postseason run or appearance. Number 12 was women's basketball, who finally got back to the NCAA tournament for that streak. So when you're talking about just a handful of sports having tough years, that's a really, really good spot to be in if you're Auburn. Winning a national title is obviously awesome. It's just an interesting thing to look at, because what we would consider the big five sports, you know, the two basketball teams, baseball, softball, and obviously football, the more high-profile ones, overall, not a great year for them, but everywhere else, Auburn did really, really well. And you feel like, I think this kind of goes to something that John was talking about. If you look at the programs that weren't as successful this past season, every one of them pretty much you can point to and say, okay, but there's belief it could get better,
right?
Real quickly.
Oh, there's no reason to think that it should be worse this year.
Yeah, football definitely, with the way it's recruited. Softball's got a new coaching staff, and then baseball. I mean, I pointed out it's different. Every year is different. But the last time Auburn missed the NCAA tournament, went to the College World Series the very next year. Mm-hmm. The bounce back ability they've showed under Butch Thompson is pretty impressive. So you look at that, and then you see some of these non revenue sports that Auburn's taken great strides in. Volleyball. You have gone from no volleyball history whatsoever to having your best run, and it's early in the Brent Crouch tenure. I think it's going to end up being, and they were talking about it with track this week, Leroy Burrell's going to end up being like an absolute steal of a coach if you know they continue on the path they're on. That team should have came very, very close to winning a national championship, won an individual title or an event title. That's a very young team.
Yeah, the whole team's
ton
back.
Of sprinters.
Can
yeah,
be back. Yeah,
ton of young sprinters on that men's team for sure. So, you look at that. Johnny Harris getting that breakthrough season in women's basketball. You just look at a lot of these spots and you think, okay, if they can maintain that level, I think, you know, swimming and diving, it's gonna be impossible to get back to what Auburn used to be.
Oh yes,
but this is the best run of six.
They're much, much better than they were just a couple of years ago.
Back to back top 12 finishes for the men's team. Back to back top 20 finishes for the women's. I mean, that is sustained success. And then, you know, of course, golf. Auburn has become. We talked about this not too long ago when the men won the national title. You could make an argument next season that Auburn could have the best men's collegiate golfer and the best women's collegiate golfer in the country leading the way with Jackson Coivin and Anna Davis.
Well, like a UConn.
Yeah, yeah, and, yeah,
a
yeah,
UConn,
yeah.
A UConn 04, but with golf as the
– exactly.
With baseball, you know, I'm trying to stay positive in the face of a really difficult season. And like you said, there's bounce-back ability. I do think one positive sign – going into this offseason is that a couple of the guys, Chris Stanfield the exception, but
yeah,
a lot
Stanfield seemed to be the one where it was like, oh, that's a bigger one.
That's one where I think for the most part the guys from this year's team that had decisions to make that Auburn would really want to be part of next year's, you know, of next year's bounce back. A lot of those guys seem to be sticking around, right? You look, Ike Irish could have gone. Right. Irish couldn't have written his. He could have written his ticket.
Oh, he could have gone anywhere.
Gone anywhere in college baseball after the season he just had, and he's playing at Auburn.
And correct. Right? And correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't cover baseball here, but it seems like they've already made some waves in the transfer portal.
Yeah, they've gotten at least three or four.
Yeah.
Transfers. I know a couple have been announced.
Yeah, I saw a couple that were like, you looked at the numbers, and you're like, that's pretty. And then again, you think, I'm very simplistic in my analysis of baseball, but 2 years ago, coming off of a year where they didn't make the tournament, they get a couple of transfers, and that just turns the thing around. You'd love to if one of these transfers turns out to be like a Sonny DeShera type, where you just look at this all SEC type of player. But it seems like they're in a good spot, because it could have been really easy to kind of feel real rough about the state of the baseball program after the season they had. But we talked about it during the season, like when they were struggling. It just seems like SEC baseball is so cutthroat top to bottom that like even the best teams have those. Like we just saw LSU.
Well, you saw
struggle. Ole Miss, Mississippi State, right, off of national titles.
That's been the thing. The teams that won the national titles in the SEC right now. Tennessee is the favorite. Mm-hmm. In the College World Series. If they win the College World Series, that will be five different SEC teams winning the last five College World Series.
Right. And
the teams that win it have struggled the next year.
And half the College World Series is SEC, the other half's ACC?
ACC, that's right.
They're gonna stand apart and like West Side Story. You know, the four teams on one side and four teams on the other are going to square off.
Well, in Kentucky.
The way they've got it is three SEC teams and one ACC on one side of the bracket, and then three ACC and one SEC
Tennessee,
on the other side.
Tennessee, A&M, and Kentucky are your three favorites. Tennessee is solidly the favorite, and then A&M and Kentucky right behind
them. Sure, but you look at
Kentucky. A lot of people like Florida's momentum.
Yeah, they're the long shot of the eight.
That was the whole thing with Florida, right? A lot of people didn't think they didn't deserve to be in the tournament, and then it's like, well, talent, it's just getting hot at the right time. Yeah. You just
got
to get in.
Because they've got talent. I mean, preseason, everybody thought they'd be in easy.
Folks who watched every Auburn game this year, you know, some of them came away thinking Kentucky is as good as anyone in college baseball. Right? Kentucky came to Auburn, pounded Auburn in those three games.
They did, but that was sort of an anomaly. They didn't score as much.
Remember that was
a lot of the time.
They had a power outburst against Auburn that they really hadn't had in other games. But that's a Kentucky team and they hadn't had a tremendous amount of. Is it first year?
This is the first time they've ever made the College World Series.
Yeah, Mitch
Barnhart. They've been really good. They won quite a few games when John Cohen was there before he went to Mississippi State.
Right, and now they're one of the favorites, although not the odds tell you behind Tennessee and A&M, but still one of the favorites to win it all.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. No, we're a little behind. Love for you to join in again. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline by Skybar. As we continue with the Thursday Drive.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 19 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew at the controls. And Justin, it's as we were talking with John Cohen, I mean, the athletics year is winding down, but there is plenty going on, football recruiting especially.
Yeah, no, they're on a really good heater right now, and you look at the visit weekend coming up, you start hearing about some of the names being floated out for Big Cat later on this summer. It should be a pretty happening time here these next couple of weeks. They seem to get some really good momentum with some of these guys on these visits, and then of course some big name flip candidates coming in. Obviously, Juju Lewis is going to be the big one everyone talks about this weekend, but quite a few guys in that mix. I did see a story today. My friend Grace Rayner, who covers recruiting for The Athletic now, She wrote a story about just kind of a recruiting notebook nationally, and her lead note today was that Caleb Cunningham, the five-star receiver, visited Florida, but Auburn is still in the lead for him, which
good.
I think that's a really good sign
for Auburn, folks. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, you know, he went down to Florida, and the word was, oh, this was a really good visit at Florida, but it sounds like he still came out of it thinking that Auburn's in the driver's seat.
Again, I mean, for those folks that questioned, can Hugh Freeze still recruit?
Oh, yeah.
The answer is yes, indeed.
Yeah. And that's the thing, and it's like, now I think the next question is, you know, that was the thing with Freeze when he came in, right? He recruited at a high level at Ole Miss, but that was a while ago. Mm-hmm. And times have changed, things have evolved. I think the next step for him now is, you know, part of the reason when he got hired is look at what his offenses did at Ole Miss.
Right.
If he can get closer to the success he had at Ole Miss on offense like he has with recruiting, I think Auburn's going to be in good shape moving forward.
But got to
put it out there on the field, and that's why this fall is very important for
recruiting
that.
Recruiting seems to be two-pronged now more than ever in the sense that, yes, you need to be able to relate to these players and their families, but you also need to keep the money faucet flowing from mm-hmm. the NIL people and, you know, keep your war chest full of money so you can win on that front too. And it's like, so, and it seems like Hugh Freeze, you know, we wondered after a 6-year break from big time college football, you wondered, you know, would Hugh Freeze be,
and the landscape having changed,
the landscape so having changed dramatically, yeah. You wondered, you know, would Hugh Freeze still be equipped for this era, this world of college football. And it seems like I don't know as far as is Hugh Freeze going out of his way to appease, you know, whatever, the folks who can make a difference with their NIL donations. My guess would be yes, because he recognizes
I think he knows, yeah, that where his bread needs to be buttered.
Yeah, you know? Sure. And then, that's clearly not the only part of
who's got the bread. I mean, really?
Yeah, I mean, and that's not the only part of recruiting because also need to be able to win over these players and their families. But you know, having the bakery full of dough, Bill.
Fresh dough. That's
fresh
right.
Dough. I think is a big part of it too. And Hugh Freeze has been a. You know, he's been able to he's been able to keep the muffin men happy, right, Bill? Like he's been able to do some of that too.
This analogy's gone on long enough.
Sure,
we gotta cut this one out.
You see what I'm like?
I get what you're saying. The problem is, I get what you're saying,
and I think
enough.
But I also think that's been an issue in the past with Auburn.
I
mean, that was when people talked about the good old boys, and they talked about meddling, and they talked about alignment. You've heard these phrases from the Tuberville era and the Malzahn era and the Harsin era.
Yeah, but you know what? Back in those days, they couldn't legally meddle as much as now. Now they can. Now you can encourage
meddling's
them.
Good when you win.
Yes.
You think people ain't meddling at Georgia and Alabama? Something happens. Mm-hmm. Something happens to keep the train rolling, right?
Those boosters at some point in the last 6 years went from meddling to the vital
yes.
gasoline that powers the engine of recruiting for your program.
Sure. Yeah.
And maybe that's what they've been all along.
They have.
But that's one of the things.
Just everybody's got to get on board.
That, you know, John Cohen was talking about. And, I mean, I would have loved to have spent even more time and seen what he would have said about, I mean, when you get into revenue sharing, one of the things we've talked about is there a way that you can, that different athletes at different sports can get different amounts without messing with Title IX? Do you have a bottom line? Do you have like a base?
Yeah.
Which would like be a base salary or minimum wage that everybody gets, and then you work on top of that?
We talked about this last week or 2 weeks ago. I think what's going to end up happening is that college football is just going to have to split off and be its own thing and be its own independent thing. Otherwise, it's going to be really tough because
if you got into a situation where every sport is saying, all right, yes, there's going to be revenue sharing, but you're only going to share the revenue that you bring in.
Yeah.
That would make some drastic differences.
Sure. And I think that's the thing. Like, if football could be like, hey, you're the sport with the huge rosters and the huge money and the huge TV deals and all that. You're your own thing, and then everything else still falls under, like, okay, the whole – I think that would be better for – because that's the whole thing. You know, you look at one of the things that, you know, that you have to deal with, you know, with all these different sports and all that is that you got to have your scholarships line up and all that. Like, say if football was off on its own thing, right, and football was a sport that operated under its own rules and it was off to, you know, didn't have to fall under the purview, you know, of the NCAA or whatever, and it's off to the side on its own, you could now get into a scenario with, even with Title IX and all that, you could look at it and say, okay, SEC, you want to make baseball full scholarship sport? Go right ahead. You got the ability to do that. You want to, you know, you want to do this for all these other sports? Because you have to do all this weird scholarship math now because of the fact that you have 85 in football.
You've got to come up with 85 women's scholarships before you do anything else with the men.
And I've always thought, you know, again, I don't cover baseball, but I do know the baseball scholarship situation is like one of the big animating things for that whole sport. And like, you know, some states with lotteries and stuff like that, they can get these kids in knowing that they ain't got to cover their school because it's already been covered. And it just makes it tougher for some of those things. But if you want to make baseball a full scholarship sport, like add some more women's sports to comments. Like, I think there are a few that you could definitely do to do that. But again, I think if football split off from the NCAA, football split off into its own thing, I think it would ease a lot of these headaches, a lot of this red tape stuff that you're going to have to deal with college athletics. I just know that, hey, college football is its own monster, and if you want to do weird stuff with your conferences and all that, you can do that. But, you know, it's just a different sport. It's different. Like, men's basketball, to a degree, brings in a good bit of money, but a lot of that's from the, you know, what the NCAA gets with the tournament.
You know, I think there would be some serious discussion if that subject is really being seriously discussed. The other side would have an argument saying, well, this could be something that could cost women's sports. Because if you took the 85 away and now said, all right, you've only got to keep it even otherwise, you'd almost have to have a mandate that you're going to keep all these women's sports. Then you could add more men's sports. You wouldn't have to, but you could.
Conferences would probably need to require a certain number.
Yeah.
Because
the easy thing to do would just be drop those
memberships.
I think at that point, like, if you're trying to get with your 85, right, I think you make a lot of these other sports full scholarships, baseball for one, make these things full scholarships, you know, add more scholarships to a lot of these other sports and just try to even it out that way. The 85 just makes it so tough.
Add
men's soccer. You already got the infrastructure for it. Add some other sports to kind of make it work.
Splitting football away and making conference decisions independent of football makes so much sense, and it's probably what should have been done 40 years ago for college athletics, because it didn't happen then. Like, I take the more pessimistic view that we're careening towards like a super league if we're splitting.
But that's what I'm saying is, like, you can do that without it affecting the other sport. Like, if football is its own thing.
But if you go super league for football reasons without splitting the other sports apart, it's just going to be a nightmare, right? I mean, you think about, like, if you go, okay, like a 16 or 20 or 24 team league of the biggest athletic departments nationally, or the biggest football programs nationally, it's just like, it feels like it takes some of the magic of the Big Tent in college athletics away, which I understand in football, the Big Tent's a bit of an illusion.
But also, what I'm saying is, when I say football splits off on its own thing, I'm not saying a super league. I'm saying, you know, just make it under its own jurisdiction, its own initial, have a commissioner, do all that stuff. Like, treat college football like a pro league, basically, that features kids that go to school there, right? And then with the other sports, you can stick to the other. Like, that's the thing, though, right? You know, it's college football that's creating all these headaches. The NCAA would be able to tick along just fine if football didn't exist, right? Like, you know.
Oh, the NCAA dearly wants to hang on to basketball.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like,
yeah. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us as we continue here with the Thursday Drive.
Experience at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final minute or so of hour number one here on this Thursday. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, while we've got a minute or so, just talk a little bit about what's going on at the Observer.
Yeah, it's been a fun week. I talked about the rundown of what Auburn did in 23 and 24 in athletics. You said that earlier this week. We did state of the position this week, inside linebackers and edge rushers. Really interesting, kind of digging into some of the numbers in both of those positions. I really think Auburn's in a good spot, especially on the edge, for the future. It's kind of like wide receiver. They got to kind of get it done.
Let's get a little experience.
Yeah, couple of podcasts out this week as well. One with me, Bill. I mean, Bill, you're Bill. With Dan and Painter, and then me and Alex Kirshner of Split Zone Duo did a podcast that went out this morning as well. Mailbag tomorrow. So plenty of stuff going on, auburnobserver.com.
We are right back with hour number two of The Drive. Plenty of time for you to join in. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline, or you can text us at 334-564-1840 for hour number two of the Thursday Drive.
Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in, hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Drew at the controls. We'd love for you to join in as well here as we get things underway with the second hour of the show, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And, yes, love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise? We've wandered off the path a little bit at times this week.
Bill, are you going to ask me about my? I don't have a Rolling Stones concert.
Well,
story,
no, no. The thing is, all right. It's funny. My wife telling me today that a good friend of hers was going to call in. Told her she was going to call in the other day. Mm-hmm. She'd never called in. She was going to call in. But then we got the call from the Philly Fanatic who talked about being at Woodstock, at the original Woodstock. And she said,
"That's insane." You can't follow that.
Can't call in after that.
Can't top that.
Dan, were you at Woodstock 99?
I was not. You know what? If I'd been just like how if Bill were a couple of years older, he would have been at the Rolling Stones show at Beard Eve's Coliseum in 1969,
first
year it opened.
Yeah.
You were not there.
No, I was not.
We know people who claim to be there. We suspect there were people who were at both that show and the show in Atlanta this past Friday night.
I feel pretty sure of that.
Which, how cool is that? I mean, if you saw them in 1969 at Beard Eve's and now you're seeing them
55 years later
at Atlanta's football stadium after the career they've had.
It's not like nobody'd ever heard of the Stones in 69.
No, they were still pretty famous. Yeah. I mean, they were headlining Altamont.
They've been pretty popular in the States for, you know, 5 or 6 years.
If I were a little bit older, I suspect I probably would have hopped into a caravan headed to Woodstock 99 for that show, because there were a couple of bands that I was really into that checked out. Chili Peppers closed the thing, who are playing there. They're playing Bonnaroo this weekend, as a matter of fact.
Bonnaroo is this weekend?
Speaking of time, 25 years after the Chili Peppers were the closing band at Woodstock 99, they are the headlining band at Bonnaroo in Tennessee this weekend. But it's that's a band I've seen a couple of times since Woodstock 99.
I don't think I've seen them
ended, but they're sensational live, especially with the 4-piece lineup they go with now with Frusciante back. It's just, I don't know, they're a blast. But no, but to answer your question, no, I was not at Woodstock 99.
No, you were.
Thankfully,
you were a little young. I'd have been pretty surprised if you were there. Yeah, I know how old you were there. I won't tell you.
Yeah, you look and I'm crowd surfing during Limp Bizkit. I'm on one of those built during. I mean, this is a crazy. So among the things that happened, folks decided during the Limp Bizkit show at Woodstock 99 that it would be a good idea to. So they had scaffolding set up for the camera people to shoot the live shots, and the scaffolding had wooden planks between the holes in the scaffolding. And so the fans at this show were so excited during the Limp Bizkit set, they started to pull the wooden planks off the scaffolding, and they would stand on it. And that, and they would be carried around. They were actually surfing with these wooden planks, and I believe some of them were load supporting. So it was like the scaffolding starting to shake, and people are also climbing on that. Like, yeah. It is. I mean, it's on. Much of it is on YouTube, and it is madness. It is just outright.
I've been to a lot of wild shows. I've never been to one where there was like property damage happening.
Yeah.
There was a couple of war tours where it was close.
A far cry from peace and love. When they're yanking the stuff apart and surfing.
Yeah, I don't have a like super famous band I saw live. To have that kind of story. But my fiance went to also in Mercedes-Benz saw Elton John's last performance in Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
Atlanta being a big deal to him. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. I know she like was with on and on and on and on and still does about that show, which is really cool.
He puts on a really good show.
The only property adjacent, and I was not at this show. I'd seen them at a different show a couple of weeks earlier, but I know some people who the first time Odd Future played the first time Odd that's a controversial LA-based hip hop group from about a decade ago, Bill. The first time they played,
Bill listens to Earl Sweatshirt.
The first time they played the LA venue, the Palladium, which is a place that a lot of rock bands play. The Palladium when they come through Los Angeles, a club, smaller venue.
Frank Ocean.
So they, Earl Sweatshirt.
Yeah, Free Earl.
But the Palladium has a hard out. Because of the neighborhood they're in.
Yeah, they have a curfew.
They have a curfew.
I've got the sound body that on the computer.
Tyler, the creator, was very unhappy that the curfew was being enforced, and he attacked the sound guy and got arrested.
That sounds like
for pulling, yeah, because the guy pulled the plug on. I guess he overturned like a DJ, control board of some kind. He overturned that and went at the guy and got hauled out of the place. And so I was not at that show, but so that's a heck of a way to end the first concert you do at a venue.
Yeah,
as I say, the lead singer.
Never seen anything like that at a concert. More like clubs that I've seen things like that in. So
yeah,
and he's since gone on to headline very, very, very big. You know, Lollapalooza. And
yeah, he did Coachella, didn't he?
Yeah, he's been a headlining act at Coachella, I think, a couple of times actually. So it's wild.
Speaking of Odd Future, I went to hang out several years ago, and Frank Ocean was supposed to headline, and this was during the era where Frank Ocean just canceled everything he ever tried to like what he was scheduled to do. So we were supposed to see Frank. That would have been great.
The closest thing to a modern day, as far as his elusiveness, it's the closest thing to Prince.
Yes.
In his heyday, as far as rumors would be whisper. You know, it'd be rumors that he's working on music, or you know, you'd find out on very short notice that an album was coming, and things would be canceled and stuff like that. And I think Frank Ocean's been playing that game for a while too, as he works on whatever's next.
All right, you can get through to us. We'd love for you to join in, and you can do so by calling. We've got a caller.
Yeah, I want to hear. I want to hear Ferg talk about the Duke game too. We got to get into that.
Yes,
some point,
absolutely. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
All right, let's get to the Drive hotline. And once again, we won't know who you are until we're speaking to you. Go ahead. You're on the Drive. Who do we have?
How you doing, caller?
I'm Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Enjoyed the show. I just wanted to mention one concert I went to.
All right.
I got to see Lynyrd Skynyrd in the cafeteria of Jacksonville State University.
In the cafeteria?
Oh, wow.
Were they playing or were they eating?
No.
Were they working?
They were playing. It was very loud.
Wow. That's a pretty big, a pretty big cafeteria.
It was like right after their first album had come out.
Wow. Oh, pronounced,
I couldn't hear for 2 days.
I bet. Wow, that's crazy. Did you have any idea what you were in for when you headed in?
Well, I had heard the first album.
Oh, okay.
But I really didn't know what I was in for. But was amazing.
Well, the stories of how and where some bands played, you know, how they got their starts and some of the venues they played. All right, so now this band isn't as big a name by any means, but I remember when I was a freshman at Auburn, I saw a little note up on a bulletin board about some music over at Gray's Amphitheater. And I saw the name of the band or the group, and I thought, well, that's not for me because I don't care about just percussion. But I ended up wandering by, and it's like, wait, that's not just percussion. It was the Atlanta Rhythm Section.
Oh, okay.
And they were playing at Graves, and it's like, oh, I was just imagining it was just a drum corps.
And I did some research in real quick, Jerry. Wednesday, March 20th, 1974.
Wow.
Lynyrd Skynyrd played Jacksonville State College in Jacksonville, Alabama.
Here's some more. I looked it up. Jacksonville State that year also had Rush and Kiss.
Wow.
Both came through Jacksonville State on tour.
I'm telling you what, the college tours,
who's booking that music?
For bands. That's about the time. I mean, Auburn was having ridiculous acts and stuff back then, too.
That's incredible. That's such a cool story.
Wow. That's great, Jerry.
One other thing before I go.
I was wondering if Lynyrd Skynyrd was playing in the lunchroom, where the heck was Rush playing?
Really? I mean, it was packed, crowded too. I mean, it was slam packed. But
you said you had something else. Yeah, go ahead.
I know the Super 7's not going to be at Auburn or Alabama anymore, so I would like to suggest Craft a Bowl in Montgomery. I think that'd be a great choice.
It would be the most central location that they could have if they could handle it. One of the things Jason Caldwell was saying yesterday is the locker room setup at UAB and at South Alabama can accommodate more than one team in each locker room.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, and he wasn't sure if Crampton Bowl could handle that. Because while you've got one game going, when you've got those three games in a day, you need the other team in there being able to get ready while another team's out on the field.
It's just tough.
That's true. But they have AstroTurf.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the facility itself, I think, would be fine.
Crampton Bowl is really a nice place to go play now. And, I know the people of Montgomery will get behind it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's tough. I was talking about this yesterday with somebody. It's tough that you're in a scenario now where you feel like, oh, there might be a chance that you have a playoff game 2 weeks later in that year that you're supposed to host, and now they're going to throw out the whole thing. I don't like it. Like, I feel like we could have at least had like an alternate or like an emergency, like, hey, if Auburn's supposed to go this year and Auburn is one of those teams to get in, okay, let's move it to Crampton Bowl. Let's move it to the Alabama State Stadium. Let's do something like that. It's just tough to throw the whole thing out with it, knowing that, a lot of these kids, no disrespect to UAB, no disrespect to South or Jacksonville State or whoever else wants to host, but a lot of these kids is like, you get an opportunity to play the state title game, you get to be a Jordan-Hare, you get to be a Bryant Denny, you get to experience that, and that's so cool for a lot of those schools, and it's tough that it's not going to be that way anymore.
Question I asked, we appreciate the phone call, Jerry, great stuff. The question I asked Jason Caldwell yesterday about this, because I genuinely don't know the feeling where he lamented the lack of atmosphere in the games at Jordan-Hare and Bryant-Denny. He said that because they can largely feel, yes, it's an 80,000 seat venue, but a lot of the times that's 60,000-70,000 empty seats in this football stadium. And I asked, does the thrill for these teams and these cheerleaders, these bands, like, does the thrill of being able to play at Bryant-Denny or at Jordan-Hare, does it outweigh the excitement that they would have if it were in a venue that was closer to full? If you played this thing at Alabama State's 25,000 seat stadium in Montgomery, if you played this thing at Trojan at Memorial Stadium on Troy's campus,
it's going to be interesting to see if that gets in the rotation because that's where AISA plays.
Right.
But
I do.
I don't know how much longer AISA's
going to be.
Yeah, just because they're losing a lot of teams.
I recognize the specialness of playing it at Jordan-Hare Stadium and at Bryant-Denny. I do wonder if moving it to a 25,000 or a 30,000-seat venue would make the atmosphere during the game more exciting because you would have.
I think it's going to be empty, mostly empty, especially for some of those like 1A and 2A games. I think it's going to be mostly empty for a lot of those spots.
Yeah, I mean, as a matter of fact, a lot of those schools would almost, they'd love to be able to take a tour of the facilities at Auburn and Alabama, but they'd love to be able to host. They feel like their towns are more into it, and it would be a bigger deal with those games on site.
I think it's such a cool thing for these players and these cheerleaders, bands, all that, and to lose that because there might be a chance that you could host one playoff game. Like it's tough to do that.
You know, I'd heard some as an on campus employee too, and Bill, you might remember this too. I had heard grumbling multiple years that Auburn had hosted it about the logistics issues
from folks.
You know about this, Justin?
From folks on campus, yes.
Folks on campus, at least at Auburn. I don't know if this is true at Alabama, but there had been grumbling from some people about the logistical issues that it could cause.
Parking becomes a big pain because a lot of folks.
Yeah, no, that's the thing is I feel like this is a convenient out for schools that might not want to deal with this anymore. But it's a loss for this. I mean, you think about Auburn and Opelika and Tuscaloosa, like, man, just the amount of people who come into town, the revenue that it can generate. I know it's tough for them. And I saw statements from Ron Anders and the other mayors involved here. It was just like, yeah, they hope that it could come back one day because it is such a big deal for them.
It's millions of dollars to the local economy. The thing is, and there's no guarantee that you're going to get to host a playoff game. They would gladly swap it. If there were like a guarantee that, every 3 or 4 years you're going to host a playoff game, you'll probably make as much in that one playoff game as you would from two Super Sevens.
Sure, but you're rolling it out.
There's no guarantee. Again. No.
And again, I think it would have been better if they were in a scenario where, hey, 2 weeks before the season or whatever, or when they know what's going on, just look at it and say, hey, all right, this is not, we can't play a game here because we might host or, we're projected to host. And move it to somewhere else at the last minute. I think that would have been better than, because like.
Well, I knew nothing about the host family sort of situation that people were telling me about. So I guess like the wheels are turning weeks or months before
months
the act, like,
in advance.
Because I agreed with you, Justin. I thought it was like, yeah, move the thing if there's ever a scheduling cut. If this is indeed the reason, if you're worried about field conditions for a playoff game, then just move the championship games in the event of a scheduling conflict. And I guess the reason, the reason Caldwell said that you can't do that, what he was telling us, which I knew nothing about this. You do have to worry about hotel and transport and stuff like that, but I feel like some of that could be done on short notice. But what's the host family deal, Bill? Is that there are people there are
there are families that will basically volunteer to handle the North or the South representative and their team, and they will
the meals and
accommodate
accommodations
for the coaches for the team they sort of become like the team family, if you will, that helps assist the university and the folks
do you think it's genuinely out of concern for a conflict with a playoff game, or do you think that's
I think that is a concern. Yeah. I think that is a concern, and I do think that it is a major concern when you have real turf that if you're going to have seven games, and even 10 days later you're going to have a playoff game in December. Auburn's better suited than a lot of places as being able to handle the turnover if you needed to resod the field.
Justin, I have no idea if they have the if this thing would meet whatever standards the AHSAA is looking for a state championship game, but I'd love to see the ASU stadium get a crack at it too. The new one in Montgomery, just off the interstate, just about a decade old, 25,000, 26,000, and a place that I think could really get rocking if they let fans try to fill it. Yeah, I don't know. That would be one of the places I would throw in. We had the caller. Jerry suggested Crampton Bowl. Like, I'd say throw ASU Stadium.
ASU Stadium would make sense as well.
South Alabama's stadium.
South is supposed to be trying to get in the mix now that this has happened.
Yeah, and they're very proud. They're very proud of their on-campus stadium.
Very nice stadium.
Yeah, down at South.
Very nice stadium.
They think they could.
Yeah, and it would not. All right, so I'm looking at the AHSAA calendar, and, I mean, it's 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
Because it says the Super 7 championships for the 24-25 season are December 4th, 5th, 6th. And December 20th is the first playoff game, right? So that is 2 weeks before. So it is a concern. It's hard to imagine that would be the concern. So, and then, as a matter of fact, for 2025 – it's December 3rd through 5th. Well, so it's 4th through 6th this year, 3rd through 5th next year.
What were you saying about – I mean, do you think there's any chance at all of playing like 1A, 2A, 3A? Like, I mean, the home venues aren't even
a
consideration
so.
Here?
Not
too bad, yeah.
No, not anymore.
No,
I mean, there's just some –
if you're looking for atmosphere in the stadium, like that would be the way to go, I think.
The thing I'm concerned about is if Mobile gets involved, it would be a great venue. But, I mean, I feel for a team coming from North Alabama.
Yeah. If you got one of those teams up from like Sam Mountain, have to go all the way down. Especially those like 1A teams. Especially like those very small teams. Mm-hmm. Do y'all know how?
I mean, Huntsville's a drive.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah,
do y'all know how they do high school playoffs in Texas? This is the coolest thing to me.
I'm not really sure.
So high school playoffs in Texas, because Texas is so big, right?
Is this a coin flip or the neutral site?
Yeah, they do a neutral, like once you get past a certain round of the playoffs. They have neutral sites, so it's be like, I got to play. They take school A and school B that are supposed to play, and then they find a school halfway between them, and that plays host. And so it's like one of those things where it's like, once you get past a certain round of the playoffs, you're not going to host, but you better be ready to host in case the state of Texas calls on you.
So you might have a terrible team, but you might be hosting.
But you might be turning around. You got to host like a 6A quarterfinal.
Auburn or Opelika against a school from Mobile, they could square off at that. What's that? That Greenville.
We'd be in Greenville. Yeah,
you'd be in Greenville. Yeah,
the Greenville stadium right off the interstate, right
Greenville,
there, right off 65.
Greenville on Monroeville. Somewhere in there.
You go to Bates House of Turkey, watch a game.
That's right.
I'll head on down to Evergreen. Yeah. It could work.
Go to that cake place.
Hillcrest could definitely host.
Go to that cake place in Andalusia.
Dean's?
Yeah, there you go.
Deans,
yeah,
you're right about that. That's not exactly between here and Mobile.
You make a trip.
It's between here and nothing.
Yeah. Well,
it's between here and kind of the beach.
Yeah. It's right. The way
to someone who used to live right there.
If you got lost a little bit.
No, that's the best way to get to Destin. That was always mine.
It's the best way to get to Destin from here. Yeah, yeah.
The 7-layer caramel.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Dude, it used to be growing up down.
You're talking to an Andalusian guy, right? I mean,
well, not really. That's fighting words there. But, you know.
That's like saying I'm a brute.
exactly. But, you know, that was the thing growing up down there. Every Freeport time there was any sort of like church event or, you know, stuff where people brought desserts, there was always going to be that exact. You'll have a chocolate one and a caramel one. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the time.
Tough finding them now. All right, we need to get to our first break. Yeah, as you can tell, we'll talk just about anything. We do want to get Justin's thoughts on the SEC-ACC Basketball Challenge. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey, this is Billy Plummer here with
SPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 27 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, and Drew at the controls. All right, Ferg, yesterday, big news. Auburn is taking on Duke in the ACC-SEC Challenge. And then Alabama's got North Carolina, both teams heading up to Tobacco Road to play those two powers up there. I think quite the tribute to the state of Auburn basketball.
Absolutely. Bruce Pearl said it when it came out yesterday. He said he said I can't play the disrespect card anymore. And I'll tell you one thing to kind of peel back behind the curtain a little bit here. Auburn for years now. I know Auburn has tried to schedule these high-profile home-and-home series, mm-hmm. and just hasn't been able to get it all finalized. So with the ACC-SEC Challenge coming up, it was an opportunity to get these high-profile games on the schedule for Auburn, but you got to earn it, right? You got to be good enough for where ESPN and the SEC looks at you and says, "Hey, we'll send you to Duke. Hey, that's the matchup we want to have right there." Great, great matchup, great venue. Obviously, Auburn played in Cameron a couple of times, but it was really, especially the first one. I think the second one was kind of closer to it. It was kind of Cameron before Duke was Duke, before Duke was like what we know Duke basketball is now.
Yeah, it was.
And then, of course, they played him in Maui.
And I believe it was
right when Coach K. Time Auburn played there, was it maybe Coach K's first year?
I think I was right.
It was before Auburn's first tournament appearance ever.
Sure.
As a program.
Yes. And you think about the Maui game a few years back and how big that was. And, man, let me tell you, you talk about getting ready for the season. Bruce Pearl talked about, hey, you know, this is going to be the toughest non-conference schedule we've ever had. Going to Duke immediately after Maui with the field that Maui is this year. Auburn, you're going to know a lot about Auburn within about 3 or 4 weeks into the season, because they're going to get tested to the highest degree. That Duke matchup's fascinating. I wrote about this for the mailbag tomorrow. Duke only returns two players from last year's team, Tyrese Proctor, who was a pretty good playmaking wing for him last season, kind of their fourth guy, and then a bench player for them. Everybody else is brand new, and the heart of that is a freshman class that had five stars in it.
Yeah, that
Cooper
is
Flagg,
about
Cooper
as
Flagg.
Highly touted an incoming class as we've seen in a while.
I think I saw somebody say Tyrese Proctor's probably going to be the shortest guy in the rotation for Duke this year. He's 6'5". So that ought to tell you what kind of team. But, yeah, they built that thing around Cooper Flagg. I cannot pronounce the other young man's name, the big center, originally from Africa. He came through the NBA Africa program. I can't pronounce his name, but like he is 7'1" defense heavy guy. I do think for Auburn though is going to be a great matchup of experience versus youth. A whole lot of talent on both sides. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this: if you're Auburn, you want to play Duke in December, and you don't want to play them in February. You know, I think that's a team when you see the amount of 5-star talent they got rolling through the high blue chips and all that. They might take some time to get together, you know, kind of get it all clicking. For Auburn, you catch them a little earlier and see if experience kind of wins out there. But, yeah, when you look at Auburn, it'll be a styles make fights game. You do have good size this year, but I just look at how big that Duke lineup's going to be, and I'm going to look at how fast and how shooter-heavy that this Auburn team could end up being.
I believe – I'm going to take a crack at this one. I think it's Common Maluwach is the young man, 7'2". Played for South Sudan or Senegal, but he's coming in as the other projected top five pick for Duke, along with Cooper Flagg on this team. Maluwach is the official, like that's the suggested pronunciation that I'm seeing here. But this guy is he's also people are going crazy about his potential and seeing what it could be right now against college basketball players, but also like. That's the example of he's going to be that's a player who could be one thing in December and could be something very different in March after a couple of
he looked raw at like Peach Jam and stuff like that earlier this year, so I know people are kind of crazy about that. Here's the other thing I saw. I think
7'2", 17-year-old Bill.
Yeah, think will be interesting to see. Miles Kelly, Auburn's new wing. Mm-hmm. Last season in two games against Duke, scored 16 in both of those games. One of those was a win for Georgia Tech. The other one was a very close loss in Cameron. So you're going to have somebody up there who's used to playing in Cameron and playing well in Cameron from his time at Georgia Tech. He had some really good games.
Yeah, that's something unusual.
Maluwach will be playing for South Sudan in the Paris Olympics. They qualified out of Africa. And so the 17 years old, going to be on that Duke team that Auburn's going to see this fall, and will be playing. We'll be an Olympian this summer in Paris, which is.
And if you haven't seen Cooper Flagg, go look him up.
Yeah, I wonder how many active college basketball players, like active guys that we're going to see on the floor this fall, will have been able to have represented their countries in the Olympics. Probably a couple.
Yeah, I was going
to
say not
Probably not too many will have been on their national Olympic team, in basketball, and that's what Malawach is doing. Auburn has a young lady. Who has been selected as an alternate for Great Britain's team in the Summer Olympics.
And to be clear, she is not here yet. If I remember correctly, this is somebody who's one of their signees.
She's an incoming freshman.
Yeah, she's an incoming. So I mean, you think about that. Have the opportunity to kind of perform on a stage like that.
That's Charlotte Booth which is a pretty British name. But Charlotte Booth is the gymnast who will be. She's going to Paris with Great Britain.
Yeah, so how about that?
Some point we'll get news on SUNY. I know there's that, that's happening in the next
team trials are coming up soon.
Next couple weeks. Yeah, the team trials before things get underway next month in Paris.
And one of the things that we mentioned with John Cohen, but didn't really get into, Stephen Pearl today said that in an interview that Auburn will be playing in Birmingham, and Bruce has talked about another big name.
Yep.
That Auburn
yep.
is
when all the I's get dotted and the T's get crossed, that's going to be a big one.
Yes.
From what I've been able
to. Are there rumbles about?
Oh, yes.
Do you guys want to be coy about the about who the opponent could very well be?
Oh, let's just say this opponent was a very prominent team in college basketball this past season.
And we were just talking about
a very prominent player.
They had a guy.
That prominent player is no longer there.
They had a pretty big guy who's moved on.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Let's narrow it down.
We'll let folks think about that as we get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 22 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Thursday. What direction we want to go now?
I thought Justin. I thought your Nike question to John Cohen in hour number one was an interesting one, and that's because that is something where there was a lot of,
and it was an interesting answer too.
Yeah
absolutely.
He said mostly good.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think that's the thing to keep in mind, especially with fans. I think there is some loyalty attached to Under Armour. I think there's some people who. It's really all personal preference at the end of the day,
right?
You know, and some people really like Under Armour stuff, and I'm sure there might be a couple sports that may look around and say, "Hey, we actually like what we've got with Under Armour compared to Nike." I did find it interesting though, Auburn winning this track championship. They all run Nike spikes because Under Armour doesn't make track shoes, and so those guys are up there getting their national championship trophy and they're runner up, and I just see all of them wearing Nikes on. So. I think it'll be an easy transition for a lot of those places.
People who were, especially younger folks, might not realize. If you don't remember Auburn making the switch to Under Armour.
Under Armour was cool.
20 years ago.
Under Armour was super cool.
Yeah, it was. And I think it's been a mutually beneficial thing for both Auburn and Under Armour. But Auburn wanted to do something different and attach, partner with a brand.
I think the thing with Nike is the ease of going to Nike, right? When you think about all the hoops you don't have to jump through, especially when you have like Charles Barkley and Bo Jackson and Tim Cook, and like you have all these connections, it's easier to be with Nike, and it just kind of affords you a lot more opportunity. And in some sports, I think they are going to see an equipment, especially shoes, kind of jump, like Under Armour makes some really good shoes in a lot of sports. There are some also sports that, certain guys prefer different looks. I don't think Under Armour basketball shoes are bad. I used to have a couple pairs of them. But you switch to Nike, right? And, for example, the shoe you want to have if you're Jani Broome is going to be different than the shoe you want to have if you're Tahad Pettiford, usually. It's just you have different needs. You have different styles. Bigger guys like, maybe shoes with more sport. Smaller guys want to be faster. Under Armour is just kind of like, you got a few picks. Nike, it's like, we make shoes for LeBron, and we make shoes for KD, and we make shoes for Zion, and we make shoes for all these guys. And,
you make shoes with Zion bust through. back dating back to when he was wearing those Paul Georges on the floor at Duke which is why he needed to make the switch.
That has always been the funniest thing to me. LeBron James is this, one of the very best to ever play. He's going to go down in history as one of the best of all time. One of the things that's funny that separated him and Michael Jordan is that Michael Jordan became this global superstar, and his shoe became, synonymous with basketball. And the Jordans, because they're accessible to a lot of people, because Jordan was 6'6" and a guard. LeBron needs a shoe built for, an offensive tackle who can who can jump out of the gym. And so LeBron's shoes, they're not bad shoes, but they're bulky and they're not as cool as those. And that's what always, which is why you see a lot of guys wear, especially with Nike, you'll see a lot of dudes wear Kyries. Not saying Kyrie Irving is a top five superstar in the league, but Kyries are, I can't see what you're, those are Kyries right there. Yeah, Kyries are great shoes. Kyrie Irving is not one of the biggest stars in basketball, but he's big enough to have his own shoe, and those are, I also like Paul George shoes a lot.
I've got the Team USA's. I showed you the red, white, and blue Paul George's that I got on sale from from some clearance rack.
How tough is it for you to buy shoes? What size shoe do you wear?
These are 18s.
18.
If I walked into a shoe store, I'd say the answer is I'm not getting.
Ever
walked into a Ross or a TJ Maxx and you're they might have something for me in here?
I'll tell you a quick story. When I was in the...
you wear a size 17 Mike Trout cleat?
When I visited, when my dad was stationed in Europe while I was in high school, we visited for Christmas, and we went to Garmisch, which is a village in Germany that hosted the Winter Olympics about 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we were going to do some skiing and some tobogganing and some other things on the slopes. And
so you need some footwear.
So I need some footwear, and so we go to this German ski boot store that looked like it had been around.
You a pair of tires.
It looked like it had been around. It was run by a fellow who looked like Santa Claus, and it looked like it had been around for centuries.
You walked into a Hans Christian Andersen.
Yes, yes. Yes, you can see it, right? There's frost on the windows here, Bill, and looks like a gingerbread house. And so I walked in there, and we tell the kindly gentleman, we say, "Hey, excuse me, sir. They didn't have any. We're skiing at the resort, and the biggest ski boots they had didn't fit me." And so we're hoping that you have some bigger ones. And he says, "Oh, let's see, let's see." And I show him.
He probably pulls out the thing to measure your foot, and it's not as big as your foot.
I show him my foot, and he goes, "Gott in Himmel!"
Yeah,
German for God in heaven.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Gott in Himmel has been a running joke in my family for decades because that was the accent that my dad and I were there.
Because people look at me, I always find it funny, when someone meets me in real life or sees me and they don't know, they've never been around me before, they'll look at me and they'll be like, "Oh, you're tall." And I'm not that tall. I am taller than most people, though. But for you, I'm around too many people like you, where it's like, no, that's a tall person.
That's a large human being.
My sister's fiance is 6'8". He walks into my parents' house for the first time. Well, we gotta deal with this. I can't not be the tallest person around anymore. I had gotten used to being taller than everybody else in my family. I can't say that anymore.
Well,
I would have to move to the village of ogres from Shrek 4.
Your father is not a big person.
Yeah, but a normal size human being.
I've got cousins that are your size or taller, Dan.
Dad's not gigantor.
I was disappointed growing up because I expected I was going to grow two or three more inches because my cousins were 6'5" to 6'7".
Oh yeah,
and it's and I stopped at just under 6'4", and it's like. Well, crap. But when I'm around most people, when I'm around Dan.
I'm tall enough where it doesn't really give me any advantages in sports, but it gives me, I'm just taller than most people. It makes me less comfortable on airplanes.
You're the third tallest one in this room.
Ferg, you have to remember, too, that my parents found me.
I'm glad Drew's here.
That's
Ferg, my parents found
me. Drew's not like the shortest guy you're going to find.
No, exactly, either.
You got to remember, my parents found me in that crater, you know, where the meteor had, you know, where the thing had crashed, you know, and left the, you know, when I was a baby.
You got done battling Gamera, they took you home.
Yeah. It's actually, if you land on the wrong
planet, you don't have those superpowers.
Dan is short for Rodan.
It came from Planet Hulk, but like he didn't get any of the radiation stuff. Like he's just big.
It didn't take.
You're like the thing, but you don't have the protective rocks around you. You're just a big guy.
Yeah. Instead of knowing science, it's like if he was super into IMDb.
Well, you can't even be Juggernaut.
Well, you know what you can
or
do?
Colossus or anything like that.
If the radio gig runs out, you can just go up to the mountains and walk around and leave tracks.
That's right. Yeah. This is like a squatch it up. Like.
Oh God. Let's get to our final break. We have not talked about tomorrow's show.
That's right.
Much at all. We will do that and more. It's still time for you to join in, you know, if you want to get into this craziness as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
Hey, this is Garrett
067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, final segment here. And again, one day, Drew's going to record what we do during the break and put it out there. And it'd probably be the last thing we ever do. But
Drive
it's
Plus.
Pretty entertaining. Yeah. Drive on. Drive, I don't know.
Overdrive.
Yeah. Oh, that's
there
it.
There it is.
Absolutely, that's it. All right. Speaking of the drive, we will be on location tomorrow. As a matter of fact, on the line and the drive, going to be at Moe's Original Barbecue on Bent Creek Road tomorrow. Brought to you by Sensa Green Heating and Air. We'll be out there from 4 to 6. Jacob and Uncle T-Bone going to be there from 2 to 4 as they warm things up for us.
They're gonna get those seats nice and toasty.
What our promo says that we'll be live outside on the patio at Moe's. There's a possibility, I've been told, that we could be moved inside.
Hey, how about that?
And that would be
all right.
I would be very appreciative.
Yeah, I mean I will trust our hosts and the capable Auburn Network team to set us up somewhere, somewhere comfortable, and keep in mind we've got some equipment that needs to stay.
Yeah, the equipment doesn't need to melt because
those things could overheat.
The high tomorrow is in the mid 90s.
Sure, and so I'm looking forward to getting out there.
I'm an elderly gentleman.
How about what was it?
I don't know about
gentleman.
I'm elderly.
We may have to, just for scientific reasons. We may have to sample the bushwhackers that are.
I've never had one. $3 bushwhackers.
From 4 to 6?
From 4 till 9.
4 to 9. All right. So yeah. $3 bushwhackers going on.
And let me tell you, folks, for my money, the wings at Moe's are some of the best you're going to get anywhere. So.
Smoker,
with the white barbecue sauce. Ooh. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes,
live music from Jake Harrelson also starting at 8:30 tomorrow at Moe's Original Barbecue.
So, and we'll be watching a little U.S. Open action on the TVs as well. Sure. as it goes from Thursday to Friday at Pinehurst.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so we'd love for you to stop by and join us. Patrick Kentley, I believe, was he is still the leader. He is at 5. Rory played really well today.
Contractually obligated to tell the story every time Patrick Cantlay's name gets mentioned. So when I was a grad student at UCLA in my second year, a couple of us were picked to teach a small group of undergraduates, and we were just randomly assigned a class of 15, 20 each. And I did not get Patrick Cantlay, but somebody else did.
Oh,
so okay. one of the other four
I
or five.
It was really going to be
no,
I was really
no.
Be
but I was.
Cool
I was
story, it, Dan.
Random draw. Random,
random
draw.
I did not.
I had a 1 in 6 chance of teaching Patrick Cantlay when he was a UCLA undergraduate, and I in fact did not.
Like me telling people to telling people, like, you know, I graduated with Cam Newton. He just didn't show up to the graduation. Like we were in the same ceremony. He just didn't show up.
When we went to Atlanta, you know, I got lotto tickets, but I didn't win.
Sure. Well, but you didn't
play the mini raffle at the Braves game.
You didn't have a 1-in-6 chance at the lotto. I mean, it's a little bit better.
Right. But it was a little bit longer. But
Cantlay's now, you know, a significant enough figure.
Did you know that he was one of the guys?
He was a pretty highly touted golfer at the time.
People said you knew there was a chance that you might be
a big star. Well, actually, I found out after the class had been assigned. I found out from somebody else who had Patrick Cantlay in their class, and I go, "Oh, wow, that's right. Like I've heard of him. That's very cool." And it was, and now he's continued to succeed, and he's the top of the U.S. Open after one day.
Yep.
Where did Valdez end up?
Good question.
He was one of the top AMs when I saw
Valdez he finished at 6 over on the day, 76. He's tied for 126th.
Sure. How does that compare to the other AMs? I wonder.
See what I can do for you there.
I am looking.
I had a couple amateurs at even. So okay, all right. So he's a little on down the list.
Yeah, but still, I mean, such an accomplishment to be there. Tiger 4 over today. Speaking of guys that are.
Scotty played poorly, shot 1 over, and he's still number 2 in betting odds right now to win the whole thing.
Morikawa even odds, just 5 back. Kepka also at 5 back. Sergio Garcia finishing under par. The crafty Spanish veteran
must be early in a tournament because Sergio's playing well. Matthew Pavon's playing well.
Glad you have Sergio.
Loved it, Auberg.
You know what? I do. I mean, Bryson has been playing better at some of these majors.
Oh, yeah. Had a really good run at the PGA.
3 under. Would not be surprised if Bryson's in contention very late in this thing.
Justin, before we run out of time, let folks know one more time about The Observer.
Yeah, auburnobserver.com. Check it out. A couple of podcasts, several newsletters up this week that you can check out, and a mailbag coming out tomorrow. auburnobserver.com. Sign up there.
All right. Thank you. That is going to wrap things up for the Thursday drive. Again, don't forget. We're at Moe's Original Barbecue at Bent Creek tomorrow. Stop by and join us if you can. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.